on the criminal procedure amendment bill. We have Ms. Bassett and his team here with us, following which we will then deal with the Deputy Public Protector on allegations of maladministration and governance failures in the Office of the Public Protector. Mr. Bassett, I see we have a document.
Thank you, Jay. Yes, the document has been distributed. It is based at the A list of the board. Chair, nothing has changed in the, we presented the document last time with alternatives in. So the A version is really just the embodiment of the document that, or the proposal that we discussed last time we were here. It has been looked at by the Lord Advisors as well. I'm going to ask my colleagues, either Ms. Ross or Mr. Mathai, to take the committee to the
Chair, on the page one is just the cover page indicating that these are the amendments that the committee have agreed to, but perhaps before that, Chair, I should mention that we also received the proposal of Honourable Adams. We looked at that, and I would not say there is a difference between her document and ours. What is missing from her document and is in our amendment is the instance where the accused person was not represented during the trial, and where the accused or applicant for the petition is not represented for the purposes of the petition. That is the major difference there. We have that in the amendment, and the HAIR document does not have that. But the other thing, the similarities between HAIR and HAIR document and ours is that he mentions, he refers to the effect that the judges may not necessarily in all instances need the whole record, but may only need a portion of the record, and that she's included in her document, and which is also in our document. And where we had a bit of a problem with her proposal here is that she, in her document, she suggests that an insertion be made in the amendment where the judge who refused the application, or let the judge who is presiding over the petition may request from the judge who presided at the trial, or who refused the application, any information. That, Chair, our view is that it is covered for in part in 10A, where the registrar has to forward a record, an application that was refused, as well as the reason for the application, because what the judge would require from the judge who presided would be what is covered in the record or what is covered in the reasons for judgment for the user. And because of that, and in agreement or working together with the state advisors, we then opted to stay with the amendment as we have prepared it and as it appears on the A list. And in on the A list itself, point number one, we correct the enactment provision there. In the document that we had initially submitted, we had inserted there a line number, which we have now omitted in the current document to only refer to the enactment provision in order not to create any confusion regarding the line. And then the point number one on clause, on the clause itself, it embodies what was discussed last week, where the concern regarding the unrepresented accused or applicant is addressed, and where we have inserted or rather turned around the proviso as it stood or in the current in the bill to cover for an accused that was not represented as a child, or an accused who is not represented for purposes of the petition, or where the judge is considering the petition in the interest of justice request that the record or only a portion of the record to be submitted to them. Page 3, chair relates to the memorandum of compromise, correcting the memorandum of the object in order to reflect the amendment as it stands now. Although this is not part of the bill, we decided to correct it, and then we omitted the whole 2.4 in the object memo, and then substituted it with a new insertion, which is a correction of, or rather a reflection of the amendment as it stands in the A-list. And that is also to limit the requirement to submit the record of proceedings to an instance where the accused was not represented, as the trial was not represented for purposes of the petition, or that the judges, in the interest of justice, requested that the record be submitted, or rather the record or portion of the record be submitted to them. Thank you, Chair.
Anything to add? No. Thank you. I think that I agree with the state legal drafters, and I would just suggest maybe we take out under paragraph 2E1 the subtree. Instead of saying only a portion of the record, just say a portion of the record. Other than that, I think we should go with that.
Yeah, look, I think that's just either general or anything. My worry is that does this actually address what the SCA judge is concerned about? Do we know of all these petitions that they've got, what percentage and what number were not represented legally when they dropped the petition? And is it actually going to correct the harm? Because it is now a requirement that if you were legally, if you weren't legally represented when you did the petition, you must get the record. So it could still be a large number. And my fear would be that you know, a number of the accused were in jail, they maybe had legal aid, legal aid representation. Obviously, they didn't get the result they expected because they got sentenced to jail. So they don't really want legal aid to assist them, and they've got no money for anyone else. So I'm concerned. I mean, I know that is the harm that we want to address, and that was the harm that legal aid themselves raised. But I would just be interested in the figures. I don't know if anybody has them. I mean, if there's enough estimates of how many of the petitions were drawn up by people who were not legally represented for drawing up the petition.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being a bit late. Just to put on those previous questions, would it not seem as we're probably not going to finalize this today or without the intention, should we not also consult with the SCA as to this is our next draft and does that meet their concerns, because it mainly comes from them and it might be useful if we forwarded the amendments to them to say, not that we are bound by what they say, but it would just give us guidance as to whether it satisfies their concerns. Thank you, Jim.
I think we were not intending to, I don't know if this was at the last meeting, but we weren't intending to finalise it today because this will only go to the House in February. I think the idea was to, the intention was that we can informally finalise so we don't forget the issues. But I don't think we're quite ready for that, but I would agree with Mr. Swartz. Let's send it to the SCA and see what they say. If they say okay, they're happy. Maybe put a note to them that one of the members of the committee wanted portion only, removed, but let's hear what they have to say. So obviously my concern is if are too many unrepresented people drafting petitions, then presumably they will raise it.
Thank you, Chair. I support the idea that we send it to the SCA. Although my concern still remains that they have expressed concern around the workload that will come from the transition. I don't see how this will work with me.
Legal aid as well. And there are the two opposed parties.
Mr. Swart, same with legal aid as well.
Possibly the NPA as well.
NPA. Yeah.
I don't know what time committees are starting to keep. The first Monday is up in the second half of January.
Can we leave that in your hands?
We'll deal with that. Thank you.
All right. Then, on the 13th, the chair will be on the 6th. Yes. Take 5 minutes, please. Whenever that. Sorry? Come then, you know, I'll join you in a minute. Okay, then that deals with two of the senior assets, Mr. Batchelor, Mr. Ross, and the rest of your team. Thank you very much. We hope we'll only see you next time. Okay, so that deals with that, and which brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is the matter of the allegation against the Office of the Public Protector. There's been a lot written and said about this matter, and a lot of it boils down to plain dishonesty. I can only appeal to people to try to be honest about this matter. If you choose to go public and write things and say things that are not true, well, I'm given to understand, honourable members, that Edward Maroncella attended a discussion last week and made comment about our initial decision that she should not attend today's deliberation. The reason we took that decision was not that we wanted her not to be here, in the sense that we didn't want her to hear what was being said, but rather members of the committee, and this was a unanimous view of the committee, not by 30 members as was alluded to, but the fact that we didn't want an undignified possibly, and I think it was going to happen, possibly an undignified flesh and blood here in public. And that was why we initially took that decision, which is subsequently changed, correctly, I believe. So here we are. Most of you would have received the Public Protector's letter of apology. If you haven't, the reason she's not here today is because of a prior commitment to a little village, I think in Limpopo, Northwest, to which she was invited. We're in the middle of the 16 days of activism, and in that regard that she's been invited, and so absent must not be misconstrued, please. Alright, I have received from the Honourable Lozelle Adams three items that she feels are most important with regard to this matter. I've not received anything from anyone else. And essentially what Adams was saying, maybe I must ask Mr. Bonner and Mr. Romano to copy the list of distributed to the committee. It has been, you've received it? All right, good. Are there any other matters, honorable members, that you feel we should raise other than these three? Ms. Schaefer, Ms. Jeffrey?
I would like to know, first of all, whether Advocate Shire is aware of the comprehensive response drafted by the Public Protector to the Speaker on the 6th of July. I'd like to go into allegations of a complaint to the International Body of Public Protectors about her. I would also like to ask about the discretion of jurisdiction and bribes allegedly from DA in the Free State fast-track investigation, if that statements were made about that. And also an allegation that Public Protector pressurised the DPP, Deputy Public Protector, into changing reports to Parliament and destroying evidence.
Let me just get that right. Comprehensive response to the Speaker. Two, letter two. What are they called, Ms.
Chair? I can't remember the name of it. I think it's international. There's some international association of public prosecutors, for public services.
Ombudsman.
Oh, Ombudsman, yeah.
And three.
There was an allegation made in one of the documents that bribes were being received from the DA in the Free State to fast track investigation.
Allegation of bribes from the DA. Any other honourable members?
And pressurising into changing reports to Parliament and destroying evidence.
Just a couple of issues just before that. The concern Public Protector made on Friday in a gathering is also reflected in her letter to you of apology, where she says, "I've noted media reports indicating the reluctance of some committee members to have me attend in person." And I suggest you write also in response to this letter just to make it clear to the full committee. And then I think a general point maybe which should be something everybody knows, but just to make it clear for the media, just with that Mail and Guardian article. And in some of the responses in the latest page of the Mail and Guardian, this past one, where the point was raised, why are we dealing with this matter? I think just to reiterate that there was an anonymous complaint and it was referred. And I'm speaking particularly to the lady from Mail and Guardian who's sitting over there, that the matter was referred by the Public Protector to the Speaker, who then referred it to this committee. Although, as the Mail and Guardian article pointed out, Public Protector herself, for whatever reason, preferred an ad hoc committee. Chair, I think the other issue is, I actually, you know, we had some preliminary discussion last time around what we are doing And I think we should hear from the Deputy Public Protector. I mean, in terms of the sequence of events, we got this anonymous complaint. There was then further information supplied by the Deputy Public Protector. And I see that there's another anonymous letter dated 9th of November. We particularly, as I understand it, wanted to hear from Advocate Shai because she's leaving office on Friday. And so maybe she could just run us through the main issues in her memo. I mean, there are specific questions members have. But I think it's also, what I would be interested in is, I think the problem from the committee side is that, and I'm raising this specifically to the lady from the Mail and Guardian, you know, the committee is not particularly eager to deal with this matter. I mean, this looks like a whole lot of allegations and counter-allegations. We would love somebody else to deal with it. I'm just not sure who is appropriate. And even you would recall in your own matter with the former public protector, I think the committee, that was an ad hoc committee, didn't actually go into the detail of the allegations. It was more trying to resolve the issues. So I think it would be useful to know from you if you have any ideas as to how we should, well, not how we should, how these matters can be dealt with, because it's a wide range. It's not easy coming from an anonymous source. Normally we would not consider anonymous complaints, but you know, the public protector herself had wanted us to look at them. And we are not a commission of inquiry or a tribunal or anything like that, and our time to devote to the matter is relatively limited. I don't know if Advocate Chai has seen the latest anonymous one, but just the level of expectations in that matter, Chair, the one that dated the 9th of November, worried me a bit. And then also there's a point made which links in with what the Sheikh has said, so that the assertion is made that the public protector has been suspended from the AOMA pending the investigation by Parliament into the allegations against her and the BPSA. The AOMA is the international body, considers the magnitude of the allegations with great gravity. As they feel in her position, she should be beyond reproach. I don't know if that is accurate, whether Advocate Chai can confirm that or maybe the CEO can confirm that. But I don't know. So Chair, for me it would be more a general sort of sense of the issues from the outgoing deputy and ideas from her as to how the problems can be addressed. And maybe there to set again for the purposes of the good lady from Mail and Guardian that this is not a witch hunt.
Thank you, Chair. I think what Honourable Jeff has just pointed out, there are issues that I wanted to point out as well. You recall last week I was concerned about getting into a lot of detail, and I spent a lot of time trying to establish what has happened here. We are not a tribunal or a commission. We would have great difficulty making findings of fact without proper cross-examination and a proper process. So I think we need to, as we discussed last week, try to stick to general issues and try to understand and hear from the Deputy Public Protector as to how maybe general remedies to be found. I'm just struggling a bit with the process we're following, and at the end of the day, how are we going to make findings or recommendations? I would be very hesitant to make findings of fact we can't, because we are not going into deep inquiries on cross-examination and that stuff. I would think we would come up with general recommendations as a way forward. I'm again concerned about anonymous letters. I do appreciate the first one was referred to us by the public protector and that gave it status. And I appreciate the concerns about people possibly being victimized, and that's why they want to place evidence before us or a letter before us. I shouldn't say evidence. But let's hear, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity before the Deputy Public Protector leaves, that we hear her concerns and then we can take the process forward. But we need to be mindful at all times
if you're not a commission of inquiry, that we're not a tribunal, and that we've got limited time to deal with these issues, which obviously are very important. I'm concerned about the last allegations that the public protector might be suspended from some, or there might be some international body. That is clearly not the intention at all of what we are doing here, and that would be a sorry state of affairs if that had happened. Purely to respond to issues that were brought to our attention by the public protector herself, if I remember correctly. They were referred to us, the anonymous letters were referred to us by her, which gave a status to those anonymous letters. So, and now we've had a number of responses. So, with those words, thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. When I raised my hand, my concern was around the format of the meeting. In many ways, I think Honourable Spark has actually also addressed that. She actually just indicated what was important in terms of what the committee was agreed on, was that because there has been communication that has come in based on the complaints that have been sent to us, and realizing that the Deputy Public Protector and leading office too, we felt it was important for her to come and engage us on the matters before she leaves. This is in no way a hearing, and I'm not really sure as we move forward how we're going to be handling what is being said, and I do believe, like Honourable Swart has indicated, maybe we're going to have to handle these issues here. And one thing that is also important is, should this process have to go on into the future, we need to actually also ask the Deputy Public Protector to register availability, which will be requested to come in to when the matter is instructed.
Mr. Sibanyan. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just briefly on the anonymous. I'm just thinking, Chairperson, say, maybe what guarantee can you say? Anonymous or whistleblowers, please come forward. What guarantee or what protection do you want to guarantee you? Because the person who decides to be anonymous, there may be some reasons. And now, I think there should be some way of how, because you cannot rely on your own anonymous document. How do you reach that anonymous person? And if that anonymous person is brave to say, I'm coming forward, what consequences are we in a position to say? We'll ensure you that those consequences that you feared, that made you to be an anonymous, will be looked after. I'm just thinking around those issues, and so that it's not to totally close to say, we don't put any value on an anonymous document. Thank you.
Sorry, I just kind of call the extent of, I think Ms. Anderson raised the issue of appointments of external firms, but not, I would just like to add that as well, and the allegation that friends of CEO are getting tenders and inflated tenders.
Friends of the CEO. So
that's what I'd just like to caution the CEO. This is just at this point an interview with Astrid Shai, and I mean, in my personal opinion, a lot of this stuff is petty, and it's not something that should be dealt with by listeners.
All right, I agree with everything you've said. All right, this meeting is open. And just that I think it is important that, I mean, this is sort of like a preliminary sense of the issues, and that we felt was important that the media are able to see for themselves what the issues are, rather than having to rely on leaks, as the good Mail and Guardian journalist had to for her article.
Well, aside from that, meetings of the committee are held in public, with the public present, and we would need a very good reason presented to the speaker for wanting to go into a closed meeting. And the new honourable members couldn't find any such reason, hence we are here. Now, it was pointed out that on a previous occasion, when there were differences between the then public protector, Advocate Mishwana, and Advocate Shai, those were held behind closed doors. But again, to reiterate what we said last week, we don't know the reasons for it. And nor are we interested, I as far as this committee is concerned, this particular process will be held in the full view of the public. I hear what you're saying about the fact that we are not a court or a tribunal. And it comes back to the question that we ask ourselves from time to time, which is, if we're not a court or a tribunal, how do we hold the office accountable? How do we hold anyone in that office accountable? Other than through this process. So here we are. All we are doing is holding the office accountable, which is what we expect to do. No more, no less. All right. Edward Shai, what I have, and what I've had for some time now, and I'm adding this batch to it, is this very thick file, a document. This is what I have received, and that will be other members of Parliament. These constitute allegations against the Office of Public. Now, members of the committee have gone through this, believe it or not, and they find that most of it is, I wish I could use the ugly word I used last week, but I can't, but it's nonsense, and they don't want to know about it. So what you heard at the start of our meeting was, we had agreed as a committee that members would go through this, filter out that which they're not interested in, and focus on that which they want you to address. Now, the issues we want you to address are the following, and Ms. Schaefer has referred to them. The public protector's comprehensive response to the speaker, does that not suffice? The letter to the International Ombudsman, or whatever they call themselves, Association of Ombudsmen, allegation of bribes from the Democratic Alliance, pressurizing changing of reports, and allegation that friends of the CEO were afforded inflated tenure. That is in addition to the following. The Public Protector's investigation into Medvow, staff criteria used for international trips, and the alleged forgery of your signature on a legal document. Have I covered it? Sorry?
The discretionary jurisdiction, where the public protector takes on it as a shooting.
Ah, yes, that's very important.
With the public protector. I mean, I've raised with her before in our meetings that particular question. But I'm not sure, I mean, I know that the child has included in her report, and so those are her views on it, and maybe I'd agree with them, but it's all something that I think you need to be taking up with the public protector itself.
I'm happy with that, but there was this other one that there was also an allegation that the deputy was pressurized into changing the report to Parliament. I don't think you mentioned it.
Right.
Did you? Okay.
All right. Advocate
Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good evening to all the Honourable Members and people here. I thank you for this opportunity. Indeed, I will be meeting on Friday, and I also agree that it's important that at least I put the status of what I saw as the government speech on record. Of course, I did write a communique to the National Assembly, to the chairperson of the Honourable Portfolio Committee, raising issues of governance. Okay, I will directly go to the items that the committee would want to hear. In regard to the public protector's response to my communique, I'm not aware of it. I was not favored with a copy. The letter to the Ombudsman I was not, I'm not aware of it, but I...
Sorry, just to correct, it's not to your document, it was to the anonymous.
Oh, I'm not aware of the, except some little report which I have also filed, which was drawn by Mr. Maruma and Ms. Mohaladi, that I was aware of. I was given to it by the public protector.
It was a draft response to the complaint, was it not?
Yeah, there is a document that was given to me when the public protector was asking for advice on how to deal with allegations. It's written some draft response. That is the draft response I received. Okay. I don't know if it's the same one that was submitted here. And then there is I heard about a letter to the ombudsman. I did hear, I think last week, the media, some media reports called and mentioned this. I did ask Ms. Masidi, the spokesperson. She said she's aware of it, but I was not aware of it, unfortunately. The jurisdiction, I understand that you said we can leave it out.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. And I will deal with the criteria for overseas. I think I read in the allegations by staff, I hinted as well that it is at the office we, in the past there was a criteria, criteria that was used by the previous public protector for taking staff to overseas because they saw it as an incentive, and people would be taken overseas according to that list, but it doesn't look like that list was used. So I hinted that it is the allegation by staff, it's possible, if investigated, it is possible that they may find that the criteria, the previous criteria which was used was not applied. The forged signature, briefly what happened was that I was injured and I was hospitalized. It was a terrible accident, and I was visited by the CEO who came with my PA, and he said after the visit it indicated that the auditors need my signature on a particular document because the document that was submitted did not have a signature, something like that. And I refused, but definitely I was not in a position that I could sign anything or read anything. My PA convinced me that it was in order, and they were reading it to me. And then I recognized that document, that it was the performance assessment that was done to the CEO on the 2nd of February, 2010. And especially my PA convinced me that she compared the document, indeed the duplicate of the document I know, and the first face, of course, had the date. It was very familiar to me, the face of the document. So I was very convinced, and I thought I was helping. I did sign the document that they said auditors wanted, only to find later that the procurement of that signature was used for creating a new performance assessment which was never done for the CEO to be paid a bonus. But the record, when one investigates through the records, it is clear that the public protector paid him a bonus without any process followed because there were no documents or submissions when the bonus was paid that will allow or authorize the public protector to pay that bonus. In short, I would say that he was paid a bonus without any process followed that we are used to follow, submission of performance assessment, a submission that motivates the payment, and then it was only after, I think a month after he was paid, that this forged performance assessment was then filed to support that payment which was done earlier. The matter is with the police, and talking about the friends of the CEO, when the police came for a supplement affidavit, I then discovered that one of the service providers given a matter was also pressurizing the police to withdraw the matter, representing the CEO. And he is among the people that are given cases to deal with in the office. So for me, I would say that when staff alleges friends are given, it needs to be investigated. There is a reason to investigate that. There are a little hints, one of them being the one that at least through investigation I know I can help with that one, in the case that it is possible. The price from the DA, I did mention around the consequences during the hearing that people started to accuse us that it was through the mentioning that the consequences of investigating in public tempers the reputation of other people. And then I mentioned, for example, people, for instance, in Northern Cape, I know a person in particular, through investigation he could be contacted to mention that we don't investigate their cases. We choose which cases we are investigating because we are paid. And that person, I think the manager in the Northern Cape can help, because I know the person who said this. Honorable Jeffrey also indicates that I could take the committee through the anonymous. When I joined the public protector in 2005, I found that there was a fraud policy which was approved in 2005 in August. And that fraud policy, I discovered it when I was given the first, I mean, it was not probably the first, but the first to me. The staff in the public protector's office do write anonymous. They are complaint orientated, grievance orientated. They do write a lot. And in the beginning, when we started to deal with anonymous, it was found that what was encouraging them as well, in my opinion, was probably the fraud policy, because it allows them to write anonymous letters and complain about anything that they seem to regard as fraud. So it was, but the staff has got this habit of writing anonymous. I was dealing with anonymous letters through delegations from the previous public protector, because traditionally it would be sent to me. Initially, I remember that we tried to say to them, use the grievance policy, use the whistleblowers, protected disclosure act. However, there would be stabilization, or people would also complain about being victimized. The last one that I think we made a breakthrough was when I went to see, it was coming from the Eastern Cape, when I decided on a method of just interviewing each and every staff members, promising that they will be protected if victimized. And that really brought a closure to the issues that were raised in the Eastern Cape. And asking me about which method to use, I have dealt with investigations or anonymous in my past for a long time. People have got genuine fears of coming forward. Not everybody would come forward, put his name, because of victimization. In my current office, indeed, I have dealt with cases of victimization where people were suspected of being the authors of anonymous complaints. And indeed, I suspect that this is how people feel. They are not safe to bring the truth out. And normally when the truth comes out, a lot of people would be used to manipulate the system, or even manipulate evidence. So normally people in our office have been, we try to discourage them on the 2010 one to say use the grievance. Some use the grievance as they continue with the anonymous complaints. If I want to make a contribution to that, our staff is not a lot. We, at the moment, we are between 250 and 300. And if people are interviewed each one of the staff members, including also the public protector, the deputy, the CEO, everyone. I think the truth will come out. So at the moment, I think it was last week when I tried to look at one of the issues that was raised about a document, I found that documents are manipulated. It's possible signatures also are placed at those documents because I had that experience as well. Honorable committee also wanted to know about my statement that I was pressurized to. I will just give a committee what has happened. During, I think it was around April, the public protector asked that I advise EXCO about anonymous. At that time, I did not have a view of the anonymous letter. And then I asked them that I would like to have the documents. But she was asking the committee. On the very same day, the CEO brought the terms of reference for the Governance and Integrity Committee. I want to give you a light about the Integrity Committee. At that time, it was not effectively in existence. We spoke about it the previous year, and the deputy was appointed as chairing this committee. The deputy doesn't have resources. I only use a PA, and I have to ask the public protector for resources. So I did ask for a team that could draft, because one of my responsibilities was to ensure that there is a terms of reference. And then I asked the CEO in particular to create the team. I kept on reminding where is the terms of reference, so we couldn't function. Secondly, the terms of reference for the something like that, for us, we put it at it in the same way as the policy. It has to be consulted thoroughly. People have got to make input, and it has to go through the management for their consent, and then it comes in. So it has to follow the consultative process for it to really be said to be effective. But it was brought there and there in the meeting after a long time. The same date, I was given this terms of reference, and then later I did ask for the documents, and the documents were sent by email through Mr. Maruma, who said he couldn't bring them because they are sensitive through the PA. He would give it directly to me. He gave me the draft report we were talking about earlier, and then I did ask him how do I advise on anonymous when I don't have it. He brought the anonymous letter. Then there were two sets of who is the team members in the committee. There were two sets, and the CEO was one of them, appointed as a public protector. Obviously, we cannot have a person advising himself. And the CEO and one Mr. Ndo were appointed. There were supposed to be committee members. Mr. Ndo was there, and then the audit committee member, myself, and then the other member who was there was in the Western Cape. The period that we had to provide advice was very short. So I added these two members just to be representatives, because the race issue were there in the allegations. Then I got all members from race groups, and then also all members according to like a manager, senior investigator, and somebody from admin to meet representatives. According to the terms of reference, we have to give advice to EXCO. However, the challenge was that both the public protector and the CEO were indicated, and everybody now in the committee who must give advice is subordinated to those people that are indicated. So it was a challenging situation. So the committee decided that the recommendation is that because everybody is subordinated to the public, we are under the influence, then Parliament will then take the action that they still appropriate instead of us. But in the meantime, we decided that in the meantime, to stabilize the environment, here are the recommendations. I think that can be read from the advice itself. When the public protector receives the advice, she then confronted me. It was informal. She was doing a media briefing, and then she was very angry with me, and I didn't understand then. Then she then told me that all she wanted is for me to say she did not do this or what. I said, I wouldn't know that. This thing has got to be investigated. Then we argued about it, and then she said ugly things. And then at that time I didn't realize exactly how she was feeling about it. But on the same day we were supposed to go home because we said goodbye, it was a Friday. But when I arrived at the office, I found that files were taken from my office. Actually, I went into the office and my PA didn't know I was there. Later I found people talking and I checked, they were giving out information. That really concerned me. And I asked her if the public protector asked for it, all the records, the total records of this matter, and then the other files, which were sensitive, were in the boxes. Later indeed, I found that the tape recorder is gone, the file containing the fraud of the CEO is gone, and all the things, most of the things that were dealt with or were raised by staff in the anonymous were gone, the medical file was gone. And I started to feel uncomfortable. I then wrote a letter immediately to Parliament, to the Deputy Speaker, to say, kindly advise me, want you to talk about it. And I couldn't get much help then. That is why I decided that I should alert Parliament about this. The pressure, the other incident that took place there was that I was able to prove that there was a system manipulation where my PA was used for the second time. She was used for a fraud against me, and she was also used now to manipulate information. I was able to prove that the public protector said she sent some document to me, which was handwritten, whereas she sent a document through email through Mr. Maruma. But on my record, the document that I saw there was a different document. It's like you say you're bringing a passport. You almost look the same. But in fact, what comes to me personally is an ID document. So it's not the same thing, and I will be able to prove that if this matter investigated. They briefly, the pressure happened because at the same time, HR manager did come to me earlier and said the public protector told her to transfer my PA to another province. And I took him after a month, then I get a submission that says she must be transferred. So, and then I remained without help for a long time until now, doing things on my own, using an intern who doesn't know anything about it. And I really felt very victimized then. Also, what I wanted to address from what you have asked. I don't know if I heard about the sequence of events. Some of the things I'm not aware of. I'm just aware about what I wrote. I'm aware of the anonymous letter the public protector did give to me through Mr. Maruma. And the what you know, I don't totally know all of it, so I'm not, but I know there was an anonymous letter which was apparently sent to Parliament. Public protector brought it to me so the committee can provide advice. We provided advice. It was not acceptable to her, and then the second thing was that I did was I wrote the communique. One of the propelling things was what I mentioned, that when the public protector started to treat me that way, I knew that probably there's nobody can take documents from that could be evidence unless something has happened that would be helped by removing that evidence from my office. I don't know, Chair, if there is something I really missed. Yeah, there's something I really have to say. I think one of the things from my side, which in the meantime I think, which concerns me, I don't know if the committee will just note it, I discover as well that the office, let me talk only about our institutions, that we don't have a code of conduct. I mean, even the state president, there is a code of conduct which is applicable to the state president, but with the deputy and the public protector, there is no code of conduct. And that, I think, anybody who studied risk management knows that it is a huge risk, because anybody can take advantage where there is no code of conduct. The second one that I really wish to plead to the committee is that there is no dispute resolution mechanisms. When it comes, let's say I do something for an office bearer does something to anybody who's subordinated to him or her, there is no dispute resolution mechanism, and that really opens up a lot of risks. The other thing is that the struggle that I had as a deputy, I really do not wish the next deputy to experience, and that I hope that the committee should really resolve the issue of delegations. The delegations was a struggle, and everybody knows I came to Parliament struggling just to get the delegations so that I can operate within the delegation. As I speak, when I tried to collect all the delegations, it went to more than 44. It was a difficult situation where you are delegated, no power is delegated, and then you don't have it autonomy. You find that you just, what kept me there was just my responsibility that I was appointed, and I have to finish the 7 years and do everything, not run away. But the situation was very unbearable, especially regarding the delegations. I think they have to be sorted out. Even if the ex says that the public protector or the deputy will have powers such as are delegated by that, I think that provision is so abused, because there is no direction as to how it has to be done. I think it has to be done with the help of the committee as well, because the delegations that I have are not really related to a statutory position. And one finds, I mean, I came there as an expert in law with a lot of qualification and so much to give, and the institution was denied that which I could give, and given something else that I was not appointed to do. And I think with the next step, it is important to look at the delegations scrutinized, because it really kills the self-esteem when you're there. You can't even think unless you are told to think, or you can't even initiate, you are told to initiate, and that is very difficult. The other thing I think I mentioned, the other thing is the situation in the office is that there has to be clarity about what exactly, because we may have different, the public protectors, even the previous one, told himself more as a CEO. We have the CEO. You find that there is no clear division of delegations. So what the CEO does, what the deputy does, and so, because normally we suspect that the public protector and the deputy would be more around in a situation if it is the board of directors, and then it has an administration this side. But we cannot decide on a policy and also implement the same policy that we have created. We have administration to implement, and in that way the institution is able to grow in terms of the mandate, but we have a challenge where everybody is the CEO in the office and nobody knows exactly where the limitations of powers regarding those that are for the CEO and those that are for the public protector. There was something that just slipped through, very important as well, that the other I think Honorable Sibanye was addressing the committee about the guarantees. I think I may not comment on that one. The other issue I had was whether the deputy will be available to help. I must really state that I'm a South African that is very committed in democracy. I would not waste my knowledge and experience and running away from helping around that as well. The second thing, I will be able to help should the committee decide to investigate. Because for me, I think we have to face the truth about what is going on in that office, and then try to find out whether we can create a conducive environment for everyone in the office. So I'm very much interested in seeing this matter through, and I know from the 1st of December, I will be under nobody's power, and I will be able to be free to yes, it's true, Chair, that for me it's freedom. It's freedom again for a while, probably, but I'm happy that from the 1st of December, I will be able to sit down and maybe also look at this matter thoroughly, because definitely, if you can see the annexure that I sent, I was also laughing with myself that I sent so much documents to Parliament, but these are not the outcome of any investigation. They were just on my table. Some I found in the office that I remember that time when I was writing. So to write something like this, you have to take leave and sit down and write it. There's no time for this. So I think I will have much time to look at how the situation can be addressed. I think if there's anything more, I will just thank the committee and
All right, thank you for that. I just want to get clarity on a few matters of fact. You say that the question of the alleged forgery is with SAPS.
Pardon me? Yes, it is with the what is it, commercial branch in Pretoria and Brooklyn.
All right. The docket number, do you have the docket number?
Can I provide it, please?
Please, I'd like that. I'd like the name of the police station.
It's Brooklyn.
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 And the name of the investigating officer?
If you give me 1 minute, it's on my cellular phone.
All right.
Magwang. The CO, no, CO.
Alright.
You know, what is the name Magwang one? You don't know.
Alright, no.
I will provide it immediately when
the date of the alleged forgery?
It was the 13th of December 2010.
2010?
Yes.
The date on which charges were laid?
My letter that I sent to them was dated 22
February
2011.
22
February 2011. All right.
Ms. Schaefer.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. First of all, I wanted to say that I would have thought that given the importance of this meeting and the allegations you've been making against public safety, so that you would have come prepared with that kind of information. You would be here coming here today specifically to give us information as to whether we should be taking action against the public sector or investigating certain issues, and you can't even give us the case number under investigating officer, which is a concern to me, because what you've told us today is actually nothing new. We wanted you to amplify what you had sent us to us, not to tell us what you'd already sent us. We've got that already. Now, what concerns me is that it's still a whole lot of very vague allegations against the public protector, which are seriously affecting their credibility in the public mind. But you've been given details. Now, first of all, you say you have got public protector's comprehensive response. Now, that she gave to the speaker. This was done on the 16th of July this year. You then wrote another letter to the speaker on the 29th of September, after she had already given a comprehensive response to which you said you had. This was your, this was asked by Murani and Fernandez, is a separate letter from him. But I mean, she has asked a comprehensive response to all the issues in the anonymous complaint, which you said you had seen. So why would you then go and write another letter on the 29th of September with substantially the same issues that were raised in the anonymous letter? The other thing is, you know, you go about the criteria for overseas trips and the previous public protector had some policy. Why should she have the same policy as the previous public protector? She's the only person. She's entitled to run her office the way she wants to. So why do you have an issue with her now not using the same criteria as Mr. Mishwan? Then I would like to know what have you done to follow up on the criminal case? What feedback have you had, and what feedback have you requested? Also, you made allegations that a service provider was pressurizing to withdraw the charges. Can you give us details of which service provider and what they were doing? You also said, when I asked about the issue of allegations against the DA bribing, that's a very serious allegation to make in a very vague terms. And yet again, you can get the details and you can ask the Northern Cape head. Who is the Northern Cape head? What is his real name? Can you tell us in more detail, please, about what those allegations are? Because you're accusing the public sector of making allegations and trying to compromise people, but you're doing the same thing. You said that documents are manipulated and possible with signatures tasted. Can you please give us details which documents have been manipulated and which signatures have been tasted? Then, the same thing about documents. You said there was a system manipulation where your PA was sent a document, or you were sent a document that that was different. Could you tell us what the document was and how it was different to the one that you said you didn't get? What was the substantial difference? Yeah, that's my main concern. My main concern is that you're here, you've given an opportunity to come and explain to us exactly what your concerns are, and you're just giving us the same vague allegations as they are in the news.
Hang on.
I'm just concerned about our line of questioning. We are coming with this specific information to help us understand this that has been reported to the office. And in the manner in which we are starting to ask questions, it makes me feel uncomfortable. It is now almost like an inquiry. I do believe that earlier we did actually talk about it. We engaged on the format of the discussion and also indicated that what is important is the DPs are coming to give us information to help us understand this that you have reported to Parliament. And there may be a process afterwards that we have to look into this, because if we're going to interrogate this, it has been in the case of a tribunal. In fact, it's not even the company of the tribunal. So it's a possession that has got to do with the complaints that have been registered in the committee, that the committee wants clarity of, seeing that the deputy public protector will be leaving. And I do believe that if, depending on what type of conclusion we will come to, later on after this meeting, whether we think that the matter is serious to the extent that it needs further investigation, there will be some kind of a form that will then be some kind of a tribunal. I'm just worried and just trying to caution us as we move forward in the manner in which we're going to be handling the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. Could I ask the Advocate Sai to give us more information about the pressure put on the police, because we are trying to get more information, to give us more insight into this. Secondly, could you be so kind as to tell us more about the ugly things said to you without giving us a detail? Those things, and could you also, for more information on our part, give us an example of one of such other things that were done or said to you. Now, finally, Chair, where were you when you were asked to sign the document that worried you and you were not aware? I think you need to know those things for more insight into this matter. Thank you.
So I think that we aren't going to be able to make a decision whether to take the matter further and need to get the information requested. So I don't see anything wrong with asking those kind of questions. We are here to get more detail and to try and do that, and I would expect the person to come prepared on that.
Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I was told 2006 that I was quite a little bit, very nice, simple. It never looked to me like I even had to prepare anything that looks like an investigation or an interrogation. So I never expected to be exposed to that. I would have prepared myself for it. I would have even queried the time I was allocated for that. So I came here, I would have come without anything in my hand, just to come and say from my heart what a spirit to confirm that indeed I did write the community and I did figure it. So I'm not prepared to answer those questions, but I've noted them. Good questions, then they will be answered when an investigation is conducted, which I'm hoping that it will. I'm going to address the issues about the prayer. Firstly, I was told by the public protector that I should write a report that exonerates her. And then she said that it was not a committee, it was a group of assassins. There were things like that, that we were there sitting there planning to take her out of the job and that I want her job and it was ugly things. Something even like today I have a poverty mentality and things like that. I did note it down and gave it back to her as well. Even asked her to come and sit down with me so to talk about it privately, the two of us, because they were very hurtful. The other things that were done to me definitely were removing documents from my office without my permission, where I personally have a key to them. It's an infringement of privacy. Even if you are a head of an institution, you cannot do that. You still have to at least go via me to say deputy. I am looking for this. She knew, she said that the documents were sensitive, they cannot go through the PA, but when she wants them, she goes to the PA without telling me. That was very upsetting as well. Also the documents that were removed by the PA to the CEO to cover up for the issue of performance assessment was also done, and there is evidence about that. The other thing which was ugly is to have a deputy who has got more than 44 delegations to do the work on her own without a functionary. Everything I did, I had to draw. If it is a document of 50 pages, I had to write it, draw it myself, and even type it. So those were the examples. So I do not have help, but I must comply with my delegation. The other way to cancel the program that I had, the program of doing quality assurance to provinces were very important in the office, and also of providing a seminar around mediation. People were complaining that they are not able to resolve cases in that way, and it was an obligation for me to make sure that they do. And the process, the project was just cancelled when I was on the way to do that. There were so many things. Even when we ask for resources, the public protector would agree. The CEO will then advertise, get people, they interview. When she's supposed to appoint, she refuses to appoint at that stage when the interviews were already held and so on. So there were just things like that. And some of the things were that I would not be informed about important details. This thing with the service provider, anyway, I discovered that people were coached about how to do investigation. I thought I missed something, and I found that I was totally excluded from taking part in at least deciding or even choosing the service provider when my responsibility is to assist with investigation. But I'm not part of it. So I was totally, I even told the public protector that I always feel like a visitor who is not welcome to in that institution. The other question was where was I when I was asked to sign the document? I during the investigation I think I will be able to even disclose my medical report. I had capsizing the mountain with a title, a terrible accident. I had broken ribs. I had a total broken fracture of my arm. I remember my two hands were tied, one on a grip, and then one was just being operated. And I was heavily medicated when they came to my office, to my hospital for this document. When the CEO came, I remember the first thing, while we were talking, he wanted to see my medical records, and he said, "Deputy, I'm going to be here for a long time," not knowing that he really wanted to see how far I'm injured so he could trick me into signing a document that he said the auditors wanted to. And the information I omitted to mention was that when we arrived at the office, it was not true. The document was intact and was signed properly. And the record shows that there has been an attempt to bring a document like that and I had declined. So it was a situation where really I was taken advantage of, and I think during the investigation this will be clarified as well. Thank you.
I'll allow you just an answer. Would you agree if I say to you that the relationship between yourself and advocate Madame Sella, both at the professional and the personal, has degenerated to an irreparable point? Or am I just making a wild assumption?
To tell you the truth, if it helps me, if somebody I would want to work with, or even friends after the session.
No, I can understand some of my questions might have needed to some time to respond, but I think I would like an answer on the question what Chad Kachai has done in the meantime to follow up at least the investigation. So I'm sure she should be able to answer that.
I'm sorry about that. Okay. To brief you a little bit, I just, at the moment, the police uncovered the other evidence. The records in my office were totally destroyed, the digital records were totally destroyed, and then we had to try to revive that by taking the computers. The report came, the latest one came yesterday, that they totally cannot recover the information. Some of them were deleted before that. So the police...
I mean, it's just relating to the forged signature. So what documents are you talking about?
Yes. It has to do with the evidence. You're asking me what have I done. It's about the fraud case. Why perhaps it's up to this stage. But the police are still busy with investigation, especially about the digital records. So, the future issue, the one that I said, I have made a charges with the police.
That's what I want to know. What have you done to follow up on that investigation? Have you had feedback on the police?
Yes, okay.
What is the other one you're talking about?
I'm talking about the feedback was that the digital records were destroyed. The police have got evidence. I think I help you with the evidence at this stage. I think this week they will finalize the matter from my side about the things that I still have to give to them. So the police was following up on us about information, because the police has been asking for information from the office. And they have indicated that there was a delay in the information being given to them.
Mr.
Sivan,
followed by Dilan Jassy and then Mr. Jay.
Those two issues, Chairperson. Advocate Chai, talking about your role, we very seldom saw you whenever public protector was appearing before the justice portfolio committee. And at one stage, a question was asked, where were you, what role are you playing, because you were discussed before the portfolio committee. Why were you not present whenever the public protector was appearing before the portfolio committee? Do you think it has to do with you being marginalized or whatever? And also throughout the other activities of the public protector, because even the community, when you talk about the public protector, you didn't feature didn't teach us in a large scale. And then finally, when the chaplain was asking you about the relationship, you said that, because unlike you that I'm asking you, you said that certain you wouldn't wish to work with in future. But at least there is a farewell party this Friday, the 30th. I think you will be part of that farewell party and the like. It's for you. Thank you.
All right. I think Mr. Sidonion will be attending.
I confirm I'll be attending.
Very good. Next to my to hear that. You'll probably be representing the committee. Mr. Pilar Majaki.
Thank you, Chair. My comment on the presentation, let me complain, it's why. I think it needs to be streamlined. The need not here. Should we come to a situation where we feel that maybe there is a need for investigation? Because it has faces and faces, and it's very important to understand how events are flowing. And also, what I would actually like to ask the Deputy Public Protector is that you have indicated that you have really totally fallen out with the Public Protector. I want to know at what point this has taken place. Because I imagine that didn't happen at her entry point, because she found you in the office. You were together. Where was the total call out? But then somebody indicated that you were requested by the Public Protector to advise her when anonymous complaint was registered. Were you already having this interpersonal relationship with her at that point? Or is this something that actually came afterwards? Because anyway, there was a report, and then when the report came out, this is maybe the Public Protector or director report, the national report. But just clarify to us, just for the sake of understanding and understanding how events were flowing. You indicated that the advice was supposed to be given to ESCO, and somehow people have compromised because ESCO is the highest body within the office. Who is ESCO? Because then we asked if you are the Deputy Public Protector, but there is ESCO that in the manner which you are presenting looks like you are not part of ESCO. Did you ever write a letter when you mentioned what you want to caution us about? You actually indicated non-existence of the code of conduct, dispute resolution mechanism within the office of the Public Protector, no policy on delegation of duties within the office of the Public Protector, no clear division of responsibilities between the CEO and the Public Protector, when you actually said everybody within the office becomes the CEO. But then going back to this one of delegation of responsibility, which seems to be the area that really frustrated you more, have you ever registered that complaint with the Public Protector? Because if you have ever registered it, I imagine when processes unfold in future, this is some of the proof that you need to actually give in order to legitimize this type of a complaint. Somehow you indicate that files have been stolen from your office. I think as the complaint or the process moves forward, it's very important for us, should we be a structure that will investigate this, or should we have to proceed with this, to really have some kind of proof as to where this has happened. Because what you're saying is that it has us, files are stolen from your office, take recorders, you indicated, the file on fraud on the CEO, etc. was stolen, the new file, you've mentioned a number of things. But what is important is proof that all of this has happened in order for us at the end of the day to know that indeed we can actually seriously also be registered. There's a serious problem within the office that you're working for. Which I think, of course, that the concern is community, because it's the responsibility of this community to ensure that these institutions that have been built to protect democracy manage to operate in a manner conducive to allow South Africans to access justice. And also you registered that you felt victimized, and that in itself also needs more information so that it can be legitimized. But for all intents and purposes, my point is that this complaint is so broad, it's wide, and I think it needs to be streamlined, otherwise you get lost in the process. And the if you can also indicate who the technical committee is, because there is a report that dated the 13th of July. And I think you just have to confirm with me. The report that has got a whole lot of allegations. What is the report of the integrity committee? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Minister, please bear in mind, I've noted your names, Mr. Jeffrey and Mr. Adams, and Ms. Adams, everyone, and then again, Mr. Jeffrey. In terms of the Public Protector Act, it reads as follows. The Deputy Public Protector shall have such powers as the Public Protector may delegate to him or her. Reading that, the assumption, the natural assumption, is that this will be done in writing, so that it's clearly laid down. So I'm not sure, I could be shy, whether you received a written delegation of powers from the Public Protector.
It's the document.
It's in the document. All right, fine. So it's there. Good. All right. Mr. Jeffrey, and then Mr. Adams.
Yeah, I mean, maybe starting on that point, I mean, just looking at the delegation which you provided in your package, which is dated the 12th of March. I can't remember the appointment date of the Public Protector, but it must have been soon after her appointment. And so I'm not clear on the complaint about the delegation. And because, look, I mean, it's a bit, what you had was corporate governance, monitor evidence of compliance with good governance requirements for the Office of the Public Protector in relation to all statutory and regulatory compliance and reporting requirements, including preparation for approval and presentation by the Public Protector against sections of the reports to Parliament, consideration of monthly reports submitted by the accounting officer in terms of the PFMA, and then organisation effectiveness, efficiency and coherence. Some of it is assisting the Public Protector, but you've also got one which is provide executive oversight over resource utilisation, oversee the development and implementation and maintenance of the rules of indigenous infection of the Public Protector Act. This includes the ADR, alternative dispute resolution systems and processes as envisaged in the Act, and then organisational training. So, yeah, I mean, one thing that strikes me particularly is somewhere along the line, I can't remember if it was Rose or whether it was the anonymous complaint, but there was a complaint that the CEO was claiming for his cell phone and having the cell phone paid, so basically double paying, double claiming. Now, if your responsibility is executive oversight over resource utilization, then it would be your responsibility, if that were happening, to pick that up. And yeah, that's just the general point. But Chair, yeah, going to the issue of Ms. Pilani Majahe's comment of it being so wide is, and it's sort of a thing of trying to get to grips with what can we do without having to conduct an investigation unless necessary. Now, the one seems to be the fraud allegations relating to the deputy, relating to the CEO's phone. And just to point out that, the word has been, and Ms. Schaefer used it just now, that, and I can't remember who else has used it, that the Deputy Public Protector signature was forged. And but reading the documentation from the deputy, it's not an issue of a fraud signature. Okay, it's an issue of a signature fraudulently obtained. And there's a big difference to that. And that is what is in the memo, effectively. Because I don't think we should stop using an allegation that somebody forged the signature, which is that they wrote it, but rather that what is in the memo of it being obtained, that she was signing, not aware of what she was signing. And I think the issue there is we need to get the case number from the police, and we need to get a response from the police as to where this matter is, because it is quite an old matter. It was the charge was laid in early 2011, presumably after Isaiah's discharge from hospital. So that's really the one. I'm concerned about the allegation that there was pressure on the police to withdraw the charges, and I think we need more information or evidence related to that, or information at least. Because I think, you know, the allegation is in the right hand with the police for investigation. We just need to ensure that the police conduct a proper investigation. Then I'm not particularly sure, but it would appear as though there's another case. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the issue of the material in your office would to me seem to relate to another case. Not the case of the signature, because presumably the case of the performance assessment would primarily, unless the documents on your computer that would link up to that, but your the case there is that you did not you were not aware of what you were fully aware of what you were signing with the performance assessment of the CEO. But if I'm correct, and what you were referring to now with in response to Ms. Schaefer is another case, then can we get the details of that case? And what is that case about? Is it about then the... Did you open a criminal case regarding the removal of documents from your office? And did they then also remove... I mean, did somebody then delete your hard drive? I wasn't clear on that. So I think the first thing we can get information from... maybe you can just leave it for there, but otherwise it is quite difficult. I don't know, maybe just to throw it out, I don't know how much the Public Service Commission investigates a number of complaints involving government departments. I don't know if they're not a Chapter 9, they fall under a set protection, but they are a constitutional body. I don't know if any of those matters are would be appropriate for them to investigate. Obviously, financial irregularity matters would be for the Auditor General. And then otherwise, I think it's maybe an issue of listing. And then, there are also the issues of the procedures. I mean, and it's maybe the Deputy Public Protector could say something about the IEA report. That was a report commissioned, it's again in the documentation, and there were a whole lot of recommendations. And I think there were some questions raised about it, the lack of implementation. Now, I would have seen it as falling, in terms of the delegation of powers, part of your mandate, those issues. So what was done with the IEA report? I think that question specifically. And, Chair, I think it's an issue of maybe identifying other issues. I think we should give the opportunity to the writers of the anonymous letters to come and see us in camera, because I think the point we've got to get to if you look at this letter, they seem to be following quite closely the event. So I'm sure that a call at the end of the meeting the committee would have to decide would it be prepared to sit in camera, not have any representatives of the Public Protector's Office. But the bottom line of where we need to get to is a situation where these anonymous complaints must stop. And they must stop because people feel that their problems are being dealt with. So it's also linked in with the IEA report and the process, the internal processes in the Public Protector's Office. That we've got to sort of, that's something I'm particularly interested in. Why are people feeling they need to vent anonymously? They say they're worried about being victimized. There is the Protection of Protected Disclosures Act. A Public Protector's Office not following that act would not make very good reading in media. I'm still not particularly clear. I think maybe that's also something that could be
that if they do come forward, they could be engaged with. I think another area is collective bargaining and worker representation. And I think I could try to know this again, roughly on exact numbers. You know, how many of the workforce of the Public Protector's Office are unionized? Why are people not making use of their unions to take up issues? I've raised a lot of issues. Maybe just specifically for Advocate Chai now, then it would be that last question the signature being forged issue. I think the only thing that one can say there is we want the cast number and the station is registered. I think she did give it in Brooklyn. We can find, we just need the cast number and we can then approach the police secretariat, civilian secretariat to provide for the information. Then it would be a question of more information or evidence on the pressure on the police, the allegations of pressure on the police. I do want to know about this because it does fall under the Deputy Public Protector's mandate, the allegations against the CEO for the cell phone usage. The issue of the IENI report and the implementation of the recommendations, and the question of the unionization or collective fora for staff members. But it's also, and I suppose ultimately the question, why are the systems not working? I think it's something we would put to the CEO at the next point and to the Public Protector himself. Why are the systems not working? I hear Advocate Chai's point that the staff are used to dealing with complaints, so they're quite litigious in a sense. But why are the internal procedures not working? Why does everybody have to go anonymous? Everybody except you have to go anonymous. Generally, yeah.
We're doing our
best. Yeah. My colleague made the point because you're leaving, but you've got the freedom. But why is the system not working?
Well, with regard to the anonymous complaints, the idea is now being mooted that the request for public service commission and all the auditor general, and the possibility of the anonymous complaints then approaching those key ones. Instead of them coming to see us, just a possibility to do. Well, Ms. Adams, you've waited very patiently.
Yes, very patiently. Chairperson, with regard to, before I deal with the issues that I actually want to deal with, the issues about the anonymous cases, I said it last week and I will say it again, we must be careful of setting a wrong precedent by allowing anonymous cases because we actually want to get to the bottom of things, but in the meantime, we are not building the office of, for example here, the public protector, because if people are serious about building that office, they would be writing their names on documents and say, these are the problems and I want you to be addressed, and then one can actually address it. So I'm very much against us entertaining any anonymous letters. But coming to today's meeting, I'm told that the DPP give us information so that we can decide how to take this matter further. But it seems like with her comments that she is preempting that there will be an investigation. And I have to say quite frankly, given her response today, as well as all these frivolous anonymous letters, I don't think there is a need for an investigation. A question I specifically want to ask her is, what resources did you have with the previous public protector? Because you complained about the fact that you only had a PA now and that you felt that you should have had more resources. But my question is, what other resources did you have with the previous public protector? If you had the same, did you also complain to him? But at the same time, I expected today that the DPP would come here and say, on Wednesday, I requested a meeting with public protector with this agenda to discuss A, B, and C. But she's not doing that. There's all sorts of vague allegations, but no specifics are being provided in this meeting so that we can say this really urge for
an investigation. So I saw you, did you at any stage, whenever you felt victimized, whenever something wrong happened, did you send an email or SMS or an oral request to the public protector saying, I want a meeting on A, B and C, if you didn't do it, why did you not do it? But then the bottom line thing is the DPC said on a number of occasions now that she felt victimized and then her own words that she couldn't send unless turned to them, which for me was very weird. And a lot of other words were said to her. But at the same time, what is ugly for one person can be constructive to another person. So all this matters of how you look at things. And so my main question really is, what is the problem really the own subjective feelings and reaction towards the public protector instead of the management style of the public protector? Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Yes, I tend to agree with some of what has been said already about the lack of preparedness of the deputy public protector for today's meeting, but I do appreciate she also indicated it in the letter that was sent by the committee, but it was a briefing, and so a lot of further information will be furnished, and I think we need to be fair in that regard. There are a lot of general statements that we would look forward to more detail about. As she indicated, she will provide the further detail. I'm just a bit concerned that we are already saying we must refer to the Auditor General or the Public Service Commission. I think that's premature. I think that we first need to obtain more information, and I think we also need to then hear from the Public Protector as to this is a preliminary briefing, and I think that we need to then hear from the Public Protector what her response is before we recommend any action or any matters being referred to Auditor General or the Public Service Commission. I think there are serious allegations that have been made, but I do think that we need to apply that audio from part at the very least, just to allow a response. And I'm sure then that we could then take a more informed decision, particularly when the Deputy Public Protector has also furnished us the further information that we requested. Thank you, Chair.
I think the question of the Public Service Commission and the Auditor General arose because Silani Majaka was launching the idea that us, we shouldn't engage in this senior commission. But that somebody else should, and the obvious question is, well, who then? And that's how that. Who's conduct such a, yeah, of course, this is a chapter 10 investigation, chapter 9. So,
the point, it wasn't a thing of that we are going to, this should be referred or that should be referred. It's something that we can look at, are the things that we could refer. Obviously, if we refer anything, we've got to be clear on what it is and see the need to. And that it's something that the question needs to be answered. So, it's not saying we, Mr. Swab's taken words a little bit out of context. And then also, maybe just on this Adam's point on the anonymous complaints, we are dealing with an anonymous complaint because it was referred to us by the public sector. But I agree that we, I think we're on the same wavelength that we need to get to a situation where these anonymous complaints stop because people are able to have their matters dealt with internally properly.
Maybe I've noted your name. Right. You know, the last time when I responded to Honorable Chair, I forgot to mention that I did not have a spy or a comprehensive report by the public protector. I only mentioned that I only had a draft. I think it's not a very big, it's not comprehensive as far as I'm concerned. I'm not aware of what was sent to Parliament, but I'm aware of what was given to me. Maybe it's different to the one that the chief. I'm very bad in writing notes, so if I forget something, forgive me. But I had Honorable Slanyoni about why was I not appearing in events that are actually, a lot of them are publicized. I'm thinking of one or two events. On a proper inquiry, I will be able to provide some some evidence, but most of the time I'm not invited, or I'm invited too late to do anything. The second is that sometimes I'm deployed. I will give two major events. The first planning session is very important for the deputy in terms of the delegation, and I was deployed somewhere to talk about power inspect, if I remember very well, somewhere outside the office. And the team building session, which was also very important to the deputy in terms of delegations, the leadership and team building. Our employees always say they need the team building. I was just invited to make an introductory remark, and I was deployed somewhere to do some work, so I couldn't attend that session. It was the same day, I think, where there was a media briefing about the anonymous. I was not there as well to get an opportunity to hear what was said about. The discussion with the Auditor General, at some stage, I remember I noted that there was a discussion next door, the bathroom just next door to me, and events are taking place. And only after the event that I'm told that all the people thought we were not here this and that, and I was not invited, the way I should be invited. There are a lot of examples like that. The discussions around the office, really in terms of proper governance, in the past, if one was asking about what was in the past and present, we had a strategic meeting between the public protector and the deputy. That is where we would discuss, the two of us, about the policy, about what we want to change, about where we want to see the vision of the organization. And that was a very important, one of the important structures in the organization, because when you go to EXCO, which involves the CEO, then we already are anonymous about the things that we would talk in one voice when we go to EXCO meeting. That we had achieved with Ake Mofana, anybody who knows the history, was one of the things I fought for, that we work together like this, and we during a confidence meeting and continued, and it was wonderful we could do it. We unfortunately, when the public protector came, this thing fallen away. It was revived after my community to parliament, but most of the time it's either she's there or I'm somewhere else, and it was very weak, and we never had much of it, although in the beginning we tried to have it. The ESCO was supposed to have been a structure where the public protector and the deputy together in one voice prevent a certain decisions that are taken around governance, and the CEO would then provide report about where the institution is going in terms of the strategic plan. Today the ESCO is like a conference with managers from today, this one, tomorrow, there are a lot of things in EXCO, and most of the time when you come there, things that are said that were not on the agenda, which are various. For me, if I want to be honest, there is no EXCO, it's just a rubber stamp of things that were decided somewhere between the public protector and the CEO, and then they bring some evidence, some witnesses to come, and then for me there is no EXCO that used to be where we the way it is structured, and we know exactly what the agenda is that we on a particular day. A lot of in my community I did mention the structures that were there and then that have not really disappeared, but what has disappeared is the authority that are given to the structures. For instance, the management meeting, the managers used to have enjoy this forum, because that's where they also can make decisions around issues of administration together. Sometimes even if they discuss with us, but they would enjoy that opportunity to make decisions around administration. It is not there anymore. The only decision maker would be the public protector, then the managers would, it would just be a conference as well, where decisions cannot be made without the public protector as well. So the structures that are there do not necessarily have autonomy that they used to have. There was a question about the relationship, whether it has fallen out or what. Of course, every time when there's a new leader, there is a time to adjust. in the beginning, the public protector was not very comfortable with me, and we had met several times, and we had a very good relationship. We could sit and drink tea during my hospitalization. She was the main visitor. I used to have her every day, even at home. So I knew that even though there were differences, business relationship was working. And only after the advice where I was a chairperson was given, I think that's when I can say there is no more relationship. It was no more a relationship. It was broken. Before that, even though there were issues here and there, but I could phone her. She could phone, she could come to my house. We really enjoyed the relationship. So I cannot really say that there was a bad relationship before her. But after the advice, indeed, it was a no relationship. Even though I remember when it was her birthday, I would still do the things that I want to do to her, in spite of what happened. But she would sit and still talk about things that we wish to enjoy in spite of it. As a relationship at the moment, is what I have described. The question was that, of course I have dedications, and if you look at the annexed, the dedications that I signed, and then I have annexed a document. The other document was the record of other dedications which were ad hoc, which were sent to the public protector, and the document was approved, where I was requesting resources and say, with this dedication, these resources will be needed, and I really need that to make, because prior to that, I think it was not long after the public protector was appointed, we had a call out where I had to undertake file inspection, and there was an executive manager whom, according to my knowledge, was supposed to serve the public protector's office and the deputy. And then while we were preparing for this file inspection, the lady came back and said she was throwing me the file, and the lady actually quit several a month or so after this. And then I got a letter from her that it is her staff, meaning the public protector's staff is her staff. If I want to use them, I must request her. And then that actually put me in a very difficult position, because I have to request the resources all the time. I have to do something, and sometimes they don't give me some. So, I want to look for it. As I said, this was not an investigation. I have to look for it. I will try my best to produce that letter. Around. Around the matters of delegation, the position in the past, I was asked about what was the position with the previous public protector. What happened was, I think after we brought matters before the National Assembly in the past, it was my proposal that we spend 6 months for confidence building, and it was accepted. During the confidence building, that's when we strengthen the structures that I have mentioned in my communique, the structures, decision-making structures. And one of the things we did was that we combined the two offices, SCCC one. Then my secretary was taken, and then they paid, we took one secretary to serve both offices. So at that time, we were trying to improve on resources in the administration, and we thought that because we have the whole office to use, why should we have so many staff in our private offices? So we had a secretary that we were supposed to share, and then we had two PAs, and then we had an executive manager who was serving both offices. The executive manager was helpful, because whatever the deputy is done in terms of the delegation, the executive manager would then use any resource in the office, and I wouldn't even have to worry about, as long as the executive manager can bring what is supposed to be. A lot of projects, if you see my delegations, are very serious projects, like the roads. And in the past, I would have a proper team helping me to draw the roads, something like that. But what happened today is that while my secretary was, for instance, taken, the salary matched with the salary of the secretary of the PC. He's earning so much money, he is not serving the office of the deputy at all. So that gap was there, and the PA I had was not trained in certain other things that the admin, actually we call them admin office, admin assistant, was doing, and that has been a serious struggle for my office. Secondly, the executive manager whom we have appointed to serve both offices is only serving the public protector's office. And as I have mentioned, if I have to do something, I either do it myself, I ask the CEO for resources, which most of the time do not come, then I have to sit down, draw documents on my own and so on in order to comply. So the situation has changed in that the deputy cannot freely just use any resource in the office. I have a project quality assurance. I have to go to province to actually take files, do file inspection. In the past, we would use managers to dig in for it. But now I would go either with a PA or an intern or a manager in any resource. So you find that the work is too much, but the resources are not there. So the situation is that while there is delegation, the powers are not accompanying this delegation. Autonomy is not accompanying this delegation. And then you always have to go back and ask for permission to do this and that. The resources are not supporting the delegation. So that is just my summary of my story around the delegation. The pressure to the police, yes, I have mentioned that through the provision of my supplementary affidavit, the police did mention to this. I think they did give the name of the lawyer. I think they will be able to provide information around the material in the office that has been taken. I decided to follow the internal disciplinary process, but I'm not getting much help from the office before I consider going to the police. If it's not really working, I will definitely have to, because the person who has custody of my information was my personal assistant, and she had to be accessed, or the inquiry had to be held first. That's why I did follow the internal disciplinary process. The IA report also covers issues around, actually the central thing about the IA report was about the role of the CEO, blaming the CEO around the challenges that employees are facing or the environment that is not conducive. And the report is also in the community. The report was not implemented. My input was to implement, the public protector has not approved it, so the report was not implemented. About the union, yes, I'm aware that from the records provided by the CEO in the past, almost all employees are members of the union. I think it's the union that the public servants are using. The thing about the union will be known by the CEO. The CEO is here, but I think it's the majority of employees from the business that were coming before us. The majority have joined the PSA, public service. The CEO doesn't want to help me. There is a union, yes. I'm not involved in administration as I'm involved with government. The allegation against the CEO about the cellular phone, from my side, I don't know if it was investigated or not, but definitely from my delegation, in the past, let me brief you that the CEO was actually accessed by me in the past and reporting to me in respect of my delegation, and then reporting to the public protector in terms of those functions that she has been personally. But after the public protector, the new one, the CEO started to report to the public protector. For the first time, I learned that she acknowledges that the CEO is reporting to her was in the letter that she wrote to me after the issue of performance assessment, the alleged fraud case that we did. So that was the first time I saw that she's actually saying that the CEO is not reporting to me. And the report that they do are no more than to me, the quarterly reports and so on, like in the past. So the issue about the allegations around this one is that I don't no more have access directly. I have to go through the public protector if I want to get any information like this. The internal, the question was why is the system not working? The truth is that in an institution where there is a proper delegation of powers, in any institution where people have plans and then they stick to their plans, and then where there are checks and balances, you'd find that the institution becomes orderly and it works to an acceptable position. But where you find that there are events that are not in the plans, and then the delegations are not respected. You find you are delegated, but you are delegated between the yard and find the bunch of people seeing that yard, then you'll never be able to exercise the delegation. But the division of delegations and powers are seen only in the financial section, but in the administration and management, especially in the administration and management, that is where the problem is. You find that a manager, instead of having a manager who manages employees, a person above the manager manages those employees, then you find that employees have conflicting instructions. So the internal procedures, checks and balances, and then the proper delegation of powers, autonomy to managers, those are the things that can make the system not to work properly. Honorable Adams mention the things about anonymous letters. In my opinion, yes, they pose a lot of problems. Even though in the public protector's office, the fraud policy allows them for a reason around this, but for me, they pose a lot of challenges because wrong people are affected. Some people may be victimized. We do have cases in the office where people were affected of drawing the anonymous letters, the computers confiscated, and you find that people with no power, they would then feel intimidated, and we had people leaving the office because they were victimized. Anonymous letters, of course, are problematic, especially they come from lawyers. One would expect a lawyer to be able to fight for his rights in a way, and knowing that the law protects them, but it's not what we need. It's just a wish that we can have that, but we don't have that. Of course, I came here thinking that it was a briefing, and with a briefing, really, for me, briefing is briefing in the dictionary, so say brief, and it's brief, it's short. It's just to say, yes, I'm here, and I did that, and this is the situation. So I'm not prepared for a lot of things. And what resources did I have with the previous? I think I've addressed it. We enjoyed the situation where the public protector's private office and the public protector's one are one office, and then the whole institution becomes our resource, and that I have enjoyed. Did I request oral request to PP? I'm sure she can tell you that I'm very outspoken. Something happens today, I take the phone. So many times I call her, let's sit down, look at the delegations and sit on there. She would apologize and she would never sit with the delegation. She was not interested in discussing that with me. Then I had to draw a document, you can see 1B. I had to draw a document outlining exactly what my truth around the litigation, and it's a written document. The other things I did mention to her that I don't have information flowing to me. Most of the time there is an event in the office and I'm passing there asking what's going on, and then she would then say that communication should have a fix to this, but I remember that she was trying to address this. I had her trying to say that she wanted to address this. Probably it's just something she's not aware of, she just assumed I would have information, but normally I don't have information because normally it comes from the protector. The previous one would talk to me directly with an SMS, with a phone, and say deputy, because we would be one office, so we would decide we would have this event and then look at the risk. Most of the time I was very clued with how we can prevent the risk. But now we find that the protector talks through secretary talks through mine, and then it's a long way. And in most cases, we find that when I'm not given that information, I rely solely on her to get information. And the admin will also assume that anything that comes from the public protector, probably the deputy knows, whereas the truth is that it's just like that. And then I had something like that. I feel I'm subjective. I've been a lawyer for more than 25 years. I know what is objective, what is subjective. And I'm sure if I was like the people who wrote anonymous letter, you would have 2,000 pages of things that I could say. But as a lawyer, you would want to say something that you know you can support. We take this in the real world in South Africa without proving something. People will never believe you. In some cases, one word against another, one man's word against another. And those are the things I just don't mention. So there's no way I can say that I was plagiarized when I'm just subjective. It doesn't even make sense to me that I would say I'm plagiarized when I know that it's my thinking. So I totally disagree with it. The something about the management style, this is the country where everybody knows that inherently everyone who leaves would lead with transformation in mind, with all the everything that has to do with strengthening democracy, also include inspiration, support, all the positive things. Anything that is negative, it's not about our mandate. It doesn't matter whether it pleases one person, one party, pleases anyone, but anything that is not strengthening is not in our mandate, even if it is good for the country, but probably is the mandate of somebody else. Even the office internally, you cannot expect the office that is charged with strengthening democracy not be able to strengthen the democracy inside its own very office. We had a good governance practice where I remember the public protector was the first to raise a hand and say, we nominate the deputy as chairperson of it. One of the things that, especially the auditor general was concerned, was that how do we go with this, because you're supposed to be a framework for promoting governance and all those things. How do we go to the state organs and say, here you are wrong, here you must do this, when in our office we don't do the same? And then we agreed that the first thing we must do is to make sure that our house is in order, and then we become exemplary to the public service. Exemplary, not telling the public service this is wrong, whereas in your office you are doing the same thing. So I'm just saying that the question of management style for me, the only one management style in this country is a transformational one. It's where you empower, it's where you use proper governance, especially in chapter 9, we then have a management style that also includes strengthening democracy, even internally. So it's not about that, it's only about facts, things that happen that one raises because they cause discomfort. Chair, I don't know if there are still other questions. I thank you very much. I think I have addressed roughly, briefly, what was asked.
Hopefully, I understand the magistrate. I've got Ms. Schaefer had a hand up, and she very kindly agreed, followed by Mr. Jeffrey. Her hand is. Okay. The chair, I thought. Okay. Right.
So I just have two issues that I'd like to raise, and then I'm also going to suggest a proposal, so perhaps I should give those, but I would like an opportunity later to do this work. Just on the one issue that was raised by Jessica in her quite detailed report was about the CEO failing to disclose that he'd been recruited when he was recruited, he was facing disciplinary action on fraud charges, and that's been suspended. But then, in the response of the public sector, she specifically said that the deputy herself who actually recommended that is basically listed. So I'd like a comment from that, why she felt there was mystery to raise that issue, and he herself agreed that his suspension should be lifted. And secondly, I just want to know, we still haven't had an answer yet as to whether the child is aware of whether public sector has in fact been suspended from the international AOMA, and whether she's aware of any complaints that have been laid with them.
So I want to go back to, well, just before that, first of all, the IANI report. The deputy, you made references to it being critical of the CEO, but I can't find any direct criticism in the IANI report. I mean, there's a number of criticisms of the whole office, but apart from a criticism of sort of top management, there's nothing specific. So that's just one. I'm not sure why you're saying it's sort of critical of it's critical of everybody. Okay. Then going back to this issue of the CEO's cell phone alliance. What? What I don't understand is in your delegation, this issue of resources. There was a meeting of the Good Governance and Integrity Ad Hoc Committee. There, the complaint was listed. It's receiving a cellular phone allowance and also makes PPSA pay his cell phone account in full. In brackets, PPSA pay CEO's cellular phone account in full, whilst at the same time the CEO is receiving a cellular phone allowance. Now, given that delegation to you, specifically on resources, it doesn't matter that he reports to the public protector. I cannot understand how you can't say whether that happened or it didn't happen. Because that responsibility, I find a delegation, but it's too many papers. That delegation was specifically given to you. So I'm sort of lost in that regard. Then there's another thing I find in this documentation. Just going back to then the complaint, there's an allegation that there was undue influence on the DDP to withdraw criminal charge against the CEO. Can you just give us more detail of what that was? Then there's an allegation made that the public protector said that the CEO repaid his performance bonus. It's specifically misinforming the public protector, misinformed staff on the 15th April 2011 that the CEO repaid his performance bonus. Has he ever repaid it? Which wouldn't have, well, I mean, the I'm not saying that he should repay it. I mean, I think that's also something that would have to be established. I think those are the, I'm still lost with this. What is the missing hard drive? Because he was speaking about the fact that the hard drive couldn't be reconstructed. What has that got to do with the, where is it then alleged that the hard drive, what's the relevance of it? Where is it alleged that the hard drive, because you keep saying there's only one, that the issues relating to your office and the documents being removed from your office dealt with internally, not with the police. So what is the linkage between the vacant hard drive and the complaint regarding the CEO's performance bonus? I just wasn't sure how that fitted together. So, see, those aren't specific things, but I just do think it's useful for the deputy to answer them, because you would have personal knowledge, or should have personal knowledge.
Okay.
Really becoming a coach now, Honorable Chair. That's right. I just miss Honorable Chair. I think the questions that you're asking, I have already covered them. I mentioned that I don't know anything about and then what was the other one? I couldn't write quick.
This is about the issue that in your complaint.
Yeah.
You had raised the issue of Mr. Mitchell having been facing four charges when he applied for the dog, but according to the public protector's response, you had actually recommended and approved the suspension be lifted.
The allegation was that from the staff anonymous online because you are not phrasing what I said the way I do. The only thing I can help here is that I will support the public protector on the issue that when Tata was suspended, the public protector, there was no way the public protector could continue, as far as I'm concerned. That was my opinion as well. There was no way she could continue with that charge. The reason was one, when I assessed the whole thing, the records were not there. We didn't get the records. The only record that was there, to be honest, I don't think the court would rely on that record. Firstly, the only thing that the public protector could use is to bring the panel back and then add witnesses. And then when the panel was interviewed, it was a situation where one would simply advise that there is no way you can succeed. So I really support the public protector with that regard to that. The victim of suspension was not something I could say that it was wrong. The allegation about it comes from the anonymous letter, not from my colleague. I was not complaining that she did wrong by lifting up suspension. It was really properly. It was coming from the anonymous, and I would take the side of the public protector to say she there was no other way in terms of the.
You can just read from the document, page 21 of the document, 13.5.4 of the document. Page 13.5.4. The type of cases involved the alleged manner in which the CEO treats the managers and or other employees, irregularities in recruitment, for instance, blah blah blah. Another example of a case of CEO failure to disclose at the time of being recruited by the public protector, he was faced with disciplinary action on fraud charge.
Yeah, that is what was said, but I have never said the public protector was wrong in giving that suspension. That I think is an example. So where people are blaming the public protector about abusing the suspension, I say that I have agreed with her, and I still agree with her that it was not something that was wrong for her to do. There was no evidence which the public protector can rely on to continue because the doctor was missing. So that was the I just mentioned the example. The situation with there was somebody who raised management style. The management style of the public protector, she preferred to give instructions. She needs to have delegation. She can never exercise them unless she gives instructions. That is the reason that you find that there is no authority, Honorable Jeffrey, to go into the records. It means that if I have to go there, I have to go through there and agree with her. And she has stated that the CEO now reports to her. It means that the CEO is not reporting to the delegation in respect of the delegation. So where there are allegations like that, the public protector has got to act in terms of the fraud policy, in terms of the public the employment contract of the CEO, and exercise the power to rectify what the people are saying there. And she has also mentioned to you that she has appointed some task team. The task team is actually her direct executive manager, direct subordinate, also the subordinate of the CEO. which also raises a conflict of interest, because they, when people are implicated and I appoint my own subordinate to then deal with the matter, it's like I'm dealing with the matter myself. So that is the situation. Those were, as far as I know, I don't know if they were investigated, and I didn't have power to do that. The thing about misinforming staff, you must have got it from the allegation. I only know that from my knowledge, the public protector told me that the CEO wants to return the money, but I don't have any proof whether he paid the money or repaid the money or not paid the money. I know that the public protector mentioned to me that he offered to pay by installments, and that is on record at the office. In respect of this case, but really I don't know. The hard drive, unfortunately for me, I relied totally on my personal assistant. She was responsible for keeping all the records of the Deputy Public Protector. Some are on the external hard drive, and then some are on her computer, and that is the evidence that were destroyed. The other backup that was done by our IT were in the form of CDs that are also missing. The linkage between this hard drive and the component, from the little investigation there, it was discovered on 31st of December, I think it is 2010 or 2011, a lot of information was removed from the hard drive, and the office was closed on that day on the 31st of December. I would be reluctant to provide the details of the fraud case as far as the link between this and that, but most of the definitely one can safely say that most of the information has got to do with the fraud case about the procurement of the signature for the business which was not I know about misinforming stuff, I'm not sure about this, but I know that the public protector reduced some bonus for certain employees and increased some bonus for certain employees, and then she went to inform the employees recently that it was after even my community and all those things, she went to inform them that she was not reducing them, it was just indicative, which was not really true, and that the people that are dealing with this would be the deputy, misunderstood her, but it is contrary to what we have in the documentation. The IME report, what about Jeff? I haven't read it recently. You would allow me to look at it again later, but I don't want to misinform the committee. Thank you.
In this the sort of report of the Good Governance and Integrity Committee. It's also alleged that you, and I asked this question, you just missed it. It's alleged that you were subject to undue influence to withdraw the charge. Can you just give details about that?
I think I read it from the anonymous letter. It's not coming from my community. I cannot say the public protector pressurized me to withdraw the charge. That I can never say. What I know,
anyway, pressurized
by the public
protector.
No. I didn't. I never heard this. Really, she never.
It found its way into. I mean, I've got a document here, which is the matter between the PDSA employees and the public protector, advice of the Good Governance and Integrity Ad Hoc Committee on the resolution of the complaint concerning maladministration, PPSA dated 12th December 2011 by PPSA employees, and there's a list. It's not a list. It's just details, detailed specification of issues in the complaint and persons complained against, but in that category. So it's not actually, unfortunately, the way it lists all the complaints. Unfortunately, it's not set out what is a viable complaint and what isn't. So you're saying that's not a viable complaint.
As far as I know, I mean, if she pressurized me, I would be the one saying that no, she didn't. In that advice, this thing of complaints was just to listen so we can bring them back, and it was not saying that they're viable or not. Thank you.
Members, I'm
having
difficulty hearing myself.
Yes.
Yeah. Giving me signal. Perhaps I should wrap up. So it's 20 to 1, quarter to actually. Should we go any further? If so, for how long? Should we come back after lunch? Miss Mutt, and then Miss Lana McLaughlin and Miss Shaker.
I'm going to answer your immediate question, but I'm also going to say what I've meant to say during a wrap-up. I think that we have sat for how many hours? I arrived late for certain reasons. Now, let's get serious now. The Justice Committee of the National Assembly has been expected to read documentation at least 6 inches high from various sources. It has been expected to sit for a number of hours. We are a really busy committee. We are also a powerful committee, as indeed I see we are now described in the press, in the context of the public sector issue. Yes. Now, we have been expected to attend, well, I happen to think it's true. We have been expected to attend to what, I'm very sorry, is essentially office politics. We have had to study documents, and we have had to listen to what is essentially office politics. I do not think this is appropriate for a committee of the National Assembly of the Republic of South Africa to have to attend to such matters. I think that a filter should be found to make sure that something like this doesn't again progress to this point. You see, I'm sympathetic to the point made by Advocate Adams that we should be very careful of setting a precedent in holding hearings, whether open or closed. Whistleblowers, I have yet to discuss that, but I have sympathy. But I think likewise, we have to be careful now in setting precedents here. You and I, Chairman, have for many years been throwing in the rubbish bin complaints, very similar to the kinds of things. But there's a kind of thing that you attend to, and there's another kind of thing which is you probably shouldn't. So I think for future reference, we should find a better filter. With respect to the outgoing Deputy Public Protector, she has not been a happy camper, as they say in the United States, this is clear, but her season is now over and a new Deputy Public Protector will come in. I do not wish to express either sympathy or the opposite, it's entirely inappropriate. She has not been a happy camper, that's the long and the short of it. Now I think, Chair, what we have to establish is, have there been actual offences? Have there been potential disciplinary transgressions? And I think the appropriate place to take that matter further is when we invite Public Protector herself, I would think early in the new year. The other thing that we do have to attend to is what the Honourable Deputy stipulated. Why are the systems not working? If it is true that they are not working, that's the other thing we would need to establish, since we are the absolute only people who can hold the Public Protector accountable. And I speak of the Office of the Public Protector. So to me, those are the only two things we have established. I think that we don't even approach a decision on them until after we have heard the Public Protector. I don't see why we have to hear her now in December. We can hear her next year. By which time, incidentally, we will also have the new Deputy Public Protector in place. And then we will take our decision. But I think that we have heard a lot of office politics, and I think it's entirely inappropriate for Parliament to do so.
asking for guidance in terms of going there and meeting. Should we not stop? We should request the council first. But my feeling is that we've actually been in the makeup for quite some time now. It has given us a picture of what is really going on, because this is the purpose of the meeting. And Deputy Commissioner Chester, I would say usually there is always two sides of the show. What do you think the public sector, when she comes here, will say in terms of a complaint that may be against you? Because for now, we haven't heard anything about whether the public sector has dealt with or any complaint in terms of her relationship with the nuclear office. I have this big document here that has got all sorts of complaints, but you know what makes me curious is the one that actually is of somebody who doesn't have special education, but is actually has been put on a salary of only 500,000 or before 500,000. That situation still continuing within the office of the Minister of Health. And indeed, anonymous complaints are tedious. And most of the time, they are actually utilized with malicious intentions. But at the same time, what is confusing is how whistleblowers actually do it, especially when they are anonymous within offices. And I think it's something that we need to look at as a country, not only for the office of the public protector, because it's a pattern that exists throughout government offices and at least 9 institutions. So that as we proceed with ideas as to how to either get rid of this anonymous issue, what measures we actually need to take to ensure that when they got to be whistleblowers in the future, those measures would actually become the most effective measures to be used in order for whistleblowers to ensure that they can be protected. But at the same time, we should always bear in mind the fact that sometimes anonymous complaints are actually used with malicious intentions. Thank you, Chair.
How did you bear in mind that that was our approach initially? Until the public protector himself said to us, please investigate this anonymous complaint. So, you know, really, where does that leave us, you know?
Exactly.
That's our initial approach. Ms. Smuts is quite correct. Mm. I mean, we took it, crumpled it up, threw it in the Western basket. And that was our response to it, precisely for the reasons you've raised. That you don't know who's written this. It could be somebody from the office, but then again, it could be Joe Soap. All right, I've got Mr. Jeffrey and then Mr. Simeone. No. I'll put your name down. Mr. Jeffrey.
I think I would like to know from the police about the discrimination.
Yes.
Not that they have to physically come here, but I think that you should write to the minister or the secretary of the police requesting a report as to the progress in that matter. I think that otherwise then, I mean, there's a number of issues one would like to get more clarity from the public protector. I'm particularly interested in the AYELI report implementation and the systems and all that kind of thing. There would be specific points where allegations are made, and maybe you could give us some time just to, as you did this time, send you a list and you then forward that to the public protector when she comes. I agree, I think it needs to be it would probably be better if it's earlier in the new year rather than this year, because we've only got one more week and I think it would take time. And then I think we can probably then assess what further has to be done. I'm a bit concerned with the anonymous complaint dated the 9th of November. You know, it's an anonymous complaint and I don't know how accurate it is.
Mm.
But there's references being made to, you know, there was a meeting of the workshop held in Pretoria for management staff on the 22nd to the 23rd of October this year. Public Protector informed everyone that Parliament was in process of investigating various allegations leveled against her. It also mentioned that staff members would be subpoenaed. At our meeting held at our office in KZN on the 2nd of November 2012, Advocate Nkosi, that's the provincial head, informed us of the investigation by Parliament was underway and we should prepare ourselves to be subpoenaed. Now, I think we also need to make it clear we're not, we've got the power, but we're not anywhere near deciding that we're going to subpoena anyone. Maybe Mr. Tetwa can just give clarity on this issue of the suspension of the public protector against the AOMA, whether that is accurate or not. But otherwise, Chair, I think it's a question of, let's get detail from the criminal case, criminal complaint, let's go to the documentation again and do a list of issues that we feel the public protector itself should respond to, and then look at the public protector coming in the new year to respond to those. But I do think our main emphasis should be the issue of the systems and why the system's not working. As far as the thing of the anonymous, I mean, look, I think it's a question of, I don't know, I mean, as I said earlier, and I keep saying, we want to get to a situation where anonymous complaints stop. And they would stop where there's an adequate, I think even if you look at the ANU reports, a lot of recommendations around problems with the systems within the office, and I think it would be probably fair to say, this is an initial observation, that it doesn't appear as though those were working adequately. So yeah, one doesn't want to encourage more anonymous material, but I think one would like to see I think we should have an opportunity, I mean, in a sense, if there's anybody who's prepared to come forward, let them come forward so we can see them, speak to them. So I know, I hear Ms. Adams' concern, but there's a point at which you've got to actually say, you know, speak now or.
Yes, Ms. Chairman. No, thank you. I just, it's clear from Advocate's wording of a number of her sentences that she is expecting us to conduct an investigation and almost trying to force us to do so. And I don't buy that. There's nothing that I have seen today that convinces me that there is even a prima facie case against the public protector of anything untoward. The matter that's concerning the most is the signature. Well, the signature of the document paper was obtained and that is currently before the police, so I agree that we should get the information from the police. I would also like to ask Advocate Shire to give us answers to the questions I asked specifically that she couldn't answer in writing, and if we can set a time limit for that, perhaps the 15th of January, and that I agree with Mr. Jeffrey about the whistleblowers. I think if people, I think there is a justification to say a whistleblower should be in the camera. We should give them that assurance. How are we going to get them to come forward? I don't know that. I suspect that they should contact you directly only. And that they should come forward if they've got serious information about serious misconduct, such as fraud, tender inflation. If they've got information on tender inflation, they must come and give it to us. If they haven't, then we don't want to hear about it. Yes, obviously. Anything of this criminal or severely inappropriate, but I do not think you hear that I wasn't spoken to and she didn't talk to me again and she didn't see me, she didn't write me there, and I was putting my tea bag in for her and I'm not interested in her. So if they've got those, I think that they must come forward, we give them an opportunity, and then after that public protector must come and give us her version and then we can make a decision. Thanks.
Sure. Alright, Mr. Sivamioni, and then Mr. Swart. Yeah, thank you. Maybe insofar as the whistleblower are concerned, at this stage we have not yet come to a decision. We will consider it and take a decision. But I think we should not appear as scaring them away, and then to say use the wrong language to say we are throwing away every anonymous, and then because the Office of the Public Protector, the deputy has already said that they have been receiving some anonymous complaints, they've been dealing with that. And then I think also we know that the Public Protector is not against a whistleblower in general. Therefore, I think when the time comes for us to make that decision, maybe we'll be saying we hear them
behind closed doors. And then Honorable Kismat has said you have a powerful committee dominated by...
No, she's a big fan. I'm a big
right, Chairperson. But she doesn't agree with it. Chairperson dominated by lawyers. We have heard about Roscoe Pound, who have said cross-examination is an engine which has ever been discovered to establish the truth. When we hear them behind those doors, I think we will not be as likely as saying we are merely trying to gather information. We have to test where their authenticity, whether they are complaints are genuine or not. There should be some, there should be the extent of trying to dig down until we come to the truth. Yes.
All right. No, I'm not going to swap it for you.
Now, Chair, I think just to remind us again, I think you pointed this out, that the public protector has asked us to conduct this preliminary inquiry following the receipt of anonymous letters that she then referred to us that gave a status to the document. It's very important for us to remember that. So we've had the preliminary briefing. I found it was useful. I agree that the issue of SAP needs to be looked at in the internal systems. We need to consider that and get that report. It was quite clear to me that even some of the contents of the anonymous letters, the DPP said that that's not true. Even there was a suspicion of a suspension of them to say that that's clearly not true. So I've got to be careful about taking what you receive in an anonymous letter where that person is not prepared to come and defend it. So, and of course the precedent that is created by that as well. It's a very dangerous territory we are entering. So I think that we need to, I agree fully that we need to consult again or speak to the public protector with that list of questions and then to consider our way forward. I think it's premature to make any preliminary finding at this stage, but I did find what the DPP said very useful, so we can take it on that basis. Thank you, Chair.
Observation, Chair, on a lighter note, that I would hope the leader would agree that it looks like the potatoes are going to be somewhat underdone. The roasting.
Oh! Yeah, well. Alright. Okay. Advocate Shy, I think we've reached the point where it doesn't seem to be any place to take in the same kind of today. There are issues, though, that are outstanding. I would really like you to email me as soon as possible docket number and the name of the investigating officer from the Brooklyn Police Station, Commercial Crimes Unit, and that relates to the fraud. It's fraud, it's not forgery. Okay. There are other matters, and I think you've made a note of it, which the Honourable Minister raised, and you yourself said that you prefer to respond later in writing, and we look forward to that. Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen, we don't want to take this further now. We want to invite anonymous, what do you call it, anonymous persons? Whistleblowers, okay. Whistleblowers, to please take this opportunity and come forward. It's extremely difficult for us to give any credence to this is how many pages, something like 12 pages, and then to interrogate. You can't do that unless the person that wrote it or the person that wrote it come forward so that we can then engage with them, and we're making this invitation public so that we can assess whether there's any veracity in the document. Mr. Jeffrey's right, we'll send a letter to the Minister and the Secretary of Staff regarding the investigation once I receive the information from the Commissioner. We would need to go through this must refer to that as six-inch thick file, pretty close, and filter out the issues that we'd like Advocate Madam Sela to respond to. And depending on whether the whistleblowers do come forward, then we'll have an opportunity to engage with Advocate Madam Sela sometime next year. I mean, just to give you an idea, some of the things I'd like to answer this is whether people in the office of it, I'm here. That interests me. Why would people in the office of the public put up a new bedroom? But that's just... So, contact voices might need. They can call Parliament and ask for my details, my cell phone number, and my email address, and my... I do have a PA, I'm pretty sure. And no one messes with my PA. Because if you mess with my PA, you're going to mess with me, and you don't want to mess with me. So I'm a little more fortunate than you are. Anonymous sources can contact her as well. I don't know whether there's
due date until
when. I don't know. It's hard to set due date because something may happen and then, you know. Do you think we should have a due date on the moment? Like what? Give me a due date. The 15th of January. 15th of January, give me a
message. Let us call it begin, and then when we meet again in the new date, we look at the kind of responses that we got, and then we decide to wait to close.
Well, at some point, the members want to engage the public protector. That's the idea of the due date.
But more anonymous complaints are not particularly helpful.
No.
So this one of the 9th of November, it doesn't really... Oh, can the people just confirm on this issue of has she been suspended from this international body? Just on that point, nothing to do with
life. No, he has not. In fact, quite apparent on our case that this anonymous letter, the whistleblower presented herself at the meeting of the International Association in New Zealand a few weeks ago, and that there were going to be some elections for the country, and they sent it to the international board to hold the ombudsman in the world. So it has become more of a national issue rather than years. So we started getting calls from the international ombudsman asking what is in fact happening in South Africa, and this being Parliament to look at. And also on the issue that the Honourable Justice asked about the unionization, we have approximately 70% of our staff fully members of the Public Service Association. We have a signed recognition agreement with them. We meet with the union almost in quarterly. That's what I wanted to put on track.
No, look, it was again on the issue of the anonymous consent. I think that in a sense shows it. I really think we should be saying that, look, I would have thought a tighter deadline. When is your secretary, when is Parliament closing, when is your secretary going on leave? But maybe it is the last week of November, maybe by the, Parliament I think closes on 15th of December, by the 15th of December. But we don't want any more, these anonymous complaints are not helpful because we then don't have anyone to ask about the veracity of the allegations. So can whistleblowers, the writers of this, please come forward, please contact you, discuss with you around being able to come and make some kind of presentation to the committee. Otherwise, they must stop sending the anonymous stuff because it doesn't help us.
Presentation to the committee will be held behind closed doors, depending on...
I think the issue, to be fair, there is a real fear of victimization, and they would need to be asked about that fear, but is that it would be with just the committee and not the public protective office.
And I'm sure Mail and Guardian would be very pleased.
Yeah, we won't allow the Mail and Guardian in either, so they should be happy.
Thank you, Mr. Sivan. Is there anything else on the room, members? None? I thank you very much for coming and making yourself available and for engaging with us. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, I think you are joined.
Yes. Thank you. Is this the last meeting of the year?
Yeah.
I just want to speak to you afterwards. I mean, there are issues, unfortunately, like the Human Rights Commission's the report on compliance with Maya. There are some outstanding issues. We are maybe having 2 weeks of committees. I know my popularity ratings with my colleagues on the committee are going to be zilch after this, but I want to speak to you about it.
What, next week? All right. Okay.
Hope members not here during the committee session.
Conference.
Not conference, I mean stop by the court. We've got 2 more weeks of committees.
Yes, we do. Committee week this week and
so, given the relations between COOP and the ANC, I would hope that Ms. Adams would ensure that she's here, otherwise adverse inferences can be made.
When are you going to stop, man?
Just from the corner, in this place.